Blog Talk Radio.
You know, I lost something.
Oh.
Welcome to the Consciousness Shift. We have a really wonderful guest with us today. His name is Anthony Pico, and he lives in New York City. He's an astrologer, a radio host, a teacher. He's got a lot to share with us today as we swim from in the shadow of mercurial waters, I guess you could put it that way. I don't know. I'm confused with that technical fun. And Anthony, welcome.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
The technical problems are basically something that come with Mercurial retrograde, right?
Well, yeah, Mercury retrograde, which happens three times a year, usually creates an atmosphere of communications that don't quite go through smoothly, people misunderstanding each other, electronics sometimes getting a little crazy. Of course, in each person's life, it depends. I always feel it depends on how closely that Mercury is actually hitting something sensitive in their particular chart. But and some Mercury retrogrades are worse than others. And this one actually doesn't happen until Monday, although some astrologers feel that a couple of weeks before and after the retrograde is kind of the shadow period where it still kind of gets haywire. Personally, technologically speaking, I have Mercury retrograde every day of the year. So I'm not a technical genius, so I'm never sure when it's Mercury retrograde, just me being an idiot. You know, I can't really be on top of that.
Well, we had our stumble onto online here with Skype. You have to... I'll tell you, Nick, how to do it.
Cool.
Unless you don't realize how I did it.
Yeah, I think I figured out your science.
Wonderful.
But you know, Skype is a wonderful tool. Speaking of a Mercury retrograde, but Mercury in particular, the communications that humanity is, I don't want to say enjoying, I think experiencing, has got its plus column and its minus column. But I think the pluses are going to outweigh the minuses in planetary consciousness, all the regular stuff we talk about around.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think that, everything we get that's new can certainly be misused. Mm-hmm. And we see people doing that, walking into traffic, looking at their cell phones and stuff like that. But I think that... this is actually, rather than Gemini, which is about information, I see a lot of the technological rush being part of the age of Aquarius.
Yeah.
Aquarius is about the future, and it is about what's new ideas, and a sort of group consciousness. For those that don't understand it that are listening, the ages of astrology are roughly 2,160 years long, so we're not in a rush. But it goes backwards. So the last age was the age of Pisces, which I find interesting because it roughly started around the time of, what I refer to as the beginning of the Christ consciousness. I don't want to get involved into whether he existed or didn't exist or any of that. But there was a shift in human consciousness around the time of the beginning of the story of Christ. And it's not uncommon for fish to be a symbol of Christianity. And that's, of course, a symbol of Pisces. And it's all about empathy and caring. And you have Jesus being quoted as saying, I give you a new commandment, love one another as I love you. And you really can't get too much more Piscean and empathetic and compassionate than that kind of a consciousness. And I think the age of Aquarius, which, by the way, no two astrologers agree when it started. But, we have... 100 years, give or take, either way, because it's going to be here for 2,000 years anyway. But I personally put it at the beginning of the industrial age, when suddenly things became mass-produced, even as primitive as they might have been, and the consciousness changed in the past Well, if you look at 100 years ago, I mean, 1915, my mother was born in 1916. Women didn't have the right to vote. Movies were still silent. There were no radios.
Yeah.
You know, it's an astounding 100 years we've been through. And I think in many ways the technology is actually taking us away from the centuries-old traditional pyramid structure of society, where there's a king or the president, and then and it goes down to the base. And I think we're actually creating small tribes through the internet by connecting to people that are on your level. You know, I know more astrologers now than I ever knew in my life in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
I'm just meeting them online. I do astrology readings. I'm going to have one next week in Pakistan. I did one last week in Ireland. I've done them in India.
I have to agree completely.
You know,
I have to agree with that completely. And including industrialization as being a time that Aquarius put a toll hold. In fact, the first time I heard that, I think, was Barbara Clow.
Mm-hmm.
She said that was the argument for Aquarius breaking through was the industrial age.
Well, I think that's part of it. You know, Aquarius is an air sign, and air signs are more thinking and head-oriented than, you know, we're coming out of a Piscean age of emotion. And I'm not saying we're the next 2,000 years are not going to have any emotions, but there is a quality to it where we're actually thinking more advanced. How do we increase things? And I know I became an astrologer in 1986, and I would say in the last 25 to 30 years, I have seen an amazing exponential growth in people's metaphysical awareness. I think it was sometime, you know, they have double income, no kids, like Dink. There's one for spiritual with no religion. I think it's SNR. It's become almost a common thing to define some generational people who, yes, are spiritual, but don't align with a particular religion, but are seeking different paths to find which one matters to them. So we're kind of having a real shift in that. And I know that, as I said, when I started astrology, I had to explain everything to people. Now I go on shows and they go, hey, Mercury's retrograde, isn't it? And I'm like, yeah, it is. Okay. You know, or Reiki for that matter. When I first heard of Reiki in the mid 80s, it was like an exotic thing. And now,
yeah,
you know, I'm Reiki level 2, and really you can't throw a stick without hitting somebody that isn't a Reiki practitioner. And that's kind of wonderful because it's giving people back their power, and I think it's making more of a group consciousness in a conscious way because Aquarius is an air sign as opposed to the unconscious group ID, not unconscious, but subconscious group idea of Pisces, you know, which is also rules the 12th house in astrology, which is the house of the subconscious. So I think we're actually becoming more into a conscious era when people are beginning to access the things that we all have. You know, we're all psychic, as we know, but some, of course, are better than others, you know, and better wouldn't even be the right term. Some of us are more skilled than others, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, we can all play baseball, but very few of us are going to be at, you know, Mets or Yankee Stadium.
Right.
You know, and I think that's kind of the way it is. And so I think some of us, unfortunately, the beginning of the Aquarian Age became very technology and science-oriented right away. And I'm not knocking science, but that's only half our brain, and that's only half of our existence.
Well,
and go ahead.
If you think about people like Goswami and there's been quite a few in the science community who have begun to speak in terms of what the ancient Egyptians called sacred science.
Mm.
And, pardon me, it is physics that generally has begun to describe the way we work with energy to heal, the way we visualize for certain mm-hmm. meditations, and the energy standards that we recognize are very, it's like reading Capra's Tao of Physics. You follow where I'm going.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or the dancing Wu Li Masters, which was inspired by the Tao of Physics.
Right.
Are both, Gary Zukav, are both books that equate physics with spirituality. Yes, absolutely.
Well, they point to our ancestors' knowledgeability about the dynamics of the universe and of eternity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now in particular, I think the last 50 years or so in the the next 50 or so are actually a big turning point. You know, I was talking about this with an astrologer, Mitchell Scott Lewis, and he said, you know, the boundaries are loose. You can't assign a date to it. And things actually, people kick back. You know, when things start really seriously changing, you have those that dig their feet in and you have those that embrace it.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's unusual to see the Tea Party Republicans, the fundamentalists rising up a bit because they're probably deep down inside frightened, you know, at what could be changing. And, well, you know, I'm a big fan of the Seth material. I don't know how much you may or may not know about it. It's a book. Seth is a character who, an entity who channeled through Jane Roberts and wrote a number of books, starting with, like, literally wrote them by dictating them.
Yeah.
And the first one was called Seth Speaks. And in Seth Speaks, he makes two points. One is that he actually says we are in the middle of a shift and that we had about another 75 years to go, and that was about 40 years ago. And he also said, interestingly enough, and this was written back in, like, 1970, that we were denying a lot of our spiritual sides and we would have to expect backlash if that happened, because the you can't – society responds as an entity, you know, sometimes. And and I think if you go from fundamentalists – and I'm not saying they're correct in what they're doing, but I understand fundamentalist Christians, fundamentalist Islamics, people kind of pushing back because there's a void. And the only way they know to fill the void is to go back to what's familiar to them.
Yeah.
Which is old Christian or whatever it might be, or old, you know, the traditional way our great grandparents did it. They were right, you know. So I think, and I think Seth made a pretty on target prediction there. We have gotten so into the direction of science to the denial of the spiritual and intuitive that I think we are seeing a backlash. And I think part of that backlash is also, well, backlash isn't even the right term. Part of what's happening is you're having people learning Reiki, people understanding you know, astrology, people, more people picking up tarot and the whole palette of things. I mean, I could list dozens of things, but you know what I'm talking about. You know,
a more holistic point of view, from body, mind, spirit to spirit, mind, body. It's interesting to me that I chose to take all these new courses when I was in school at Cornell.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Watkins Glen, and every day, and this was while that was being dictated through Jane Roberts, I drove mm-hmm. past her house every day,
yeah.
unaware of what, and I was studying what they call now psychology, but parapsychology.
Yes.
And it's just, the resonance is an important thing that people are learning about, too. We are pebbles in the pond.
Yes, the ripples, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That awareness, I think that awareness is huge in the shift that's going on right now. And I think that the magnetics of your skill as an astrologer, understanding that where I have been listening to for the last 15 years astrological information where I felt intuitively it was correct for me with what I do with making the oils and the flower essences.
Mm-hmm.
But I have studied more and more as I've gone along. I tell you, one book that opened my eyes huge to the influences of the, not just the constellations, but the constellations and you mentioned precession of the equinoxes and all these great and grander cycles down to the smaller cycle was Barbara Clow's Liquid Light of Sex.
Yes, it's a wonderful book, yes.
Yeah, it told me about those personal cycles that absolutely have helped me to understand how to work with astrological influences to the best of my understanding.
Well, yeah, it's you know, one of the things I like about astrology is there's no end to it. The planets keep circling. They keep going through the zodiac over and over again. And, you know, there are 10 that we currently utilize. And because they all move at different speeds, the odds are very good that they've never been – I've never done the math, but they haven't been in the exact same position in probably millennia, because they all, it's like having a clock with 10 hands on it, and one hand takes 250 years to go around the clock, and the other hand takes, you know, 30 days, and they're just not going to, and the other hands are all varied in between there. You're just not going to have them all in the same position, which, one, points out how incredibly unique every one of us is, but it also points out how we're all connected, too. You know, we're all part of this thing that we're all a unique expression of. You know, somebody once said, your birth is the universe expressing itself at that moment. You know, which is why one of the metaphorical reasons astrology makes sense. You know, I often tease people from born in the mid-60s, and I say, you know, you have in your chart what created the 1960s. You know, all that crazy rebellion and breaking up in rules and something that was going on in the sky is also in these people's birth charts.
Yeah.
So when they say children of the 60s are the ones that came of age in the 60s, and then there's the ones that were born in the 60s carrying that energy with them in life. You know,
that's so interesting, because I just noticed this past birthday, my birthday's in March, and I have certain planets and with Taurus, Mars and Venus in Taurus, and so it seemed like right around my birthday this year, that's what was going on. It was Taurus, and I wondered exactly what you're talking about right now. You know, is it because it's my birthday and I never noticed it before, or is this like a special year?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, you're basically what we refer to as a birthday in astrology, we call your solar return. And what that literally means is the sun has returned to exactly where it was when you were born. So if you're a 12 degree Pisces, let's say, on sometime in the 24 hours around your birthday, the sun will be at exactly 12 degrees Pisces. And in a sense, it almost lights you up every year. There's a reason your birthday is kind of a celebration of yourself, because the sun returns to where it was when you were born and kind of lights you up again. But now, I don't know the degrees of your Taurus stuff, but I know that Pluto right now is in mid-Capricorn. And that means it's trining Taurus in general and might very specifically be trining particular things in your chart that are energizing it, actually. You know, we have... You know, one thing of interest, we have what I consider in astrology personal planets, which is the Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, and Mars, and then the outer planets, which is Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, and then we kind of consider the in-between planets are Jupiter and Saturn. And the outer three planets are very much generational. Those are the ones that mundane astrologers watch to look to see what's might be happening in the world in terms of world events. And by world events, I'm not just talking people, but I'm also talking earthquakes, tidal waves, whatever it might be. What's kind of interesting is since 2000 and I wrote it down here somewhere, 2008, all three outer planets have moved into new signs over the next couple of years, which is unusual because they're not in sync with each other. And usually, you know, Pluto might enter a sign and then maybe 3 years later, another Neptune might enter a sign. But what happened is in November 2008, Pluto went into Capricorn. And then in April of 2011, both Uranus and Neptune went into the next sign. Neptune went into Pisces and Uranus went into Aries. And I think we've all felt it. I mean, we can start with Pluto and Capricorn really kind of entered Capricorn right about the time of the financial crisis. Mm-hmm. And many astrologers will say Capricorn is about physical reality and practical reality. And Pluto is about transformation. So you have us going from Pluto and Sagittarius, which is the dreamer, the inflator, and suddenly all these inflated mortgages, and down it comes. And, you know, Capricorn never takes away what you need, but what you think you need and what you need are two different things. Mm-hmm. So we really kind of had a big shift in the sense of responsibility that comes with Capricorn. You know, no more selling BS mortgages to people that really can't afford them because you want to make a profit and you're going to sell, you know, packaged mortgages as a debt package to other companies. You can't do that anymore because Capricorn's saying, no, you're going to have to fix this. Right. And the other two shifts that are pretty strong, Uranus went into Aries on March 12th, 2011. March 11th, 2011 is when Fukushima happened. You also have the Arab Spring is right about that time. Now, Uranus is the planet of disruption and freedom and surprise and sometimes a little bit of chaos, and the individual is in terms of human rights. Putting it in Aries is like giving it five cups of coffee and saying, go, here's the lighter fluid in the matches, just see what you can do. So we have, we had the earthquake that produced Fukushima. We've had actually a number of recent earthquakes over the past 5 years. We've had volcanoes becoming active again. As I mentioned, the Arab Spring, there's been quite a bit of disruption going on around the world in very suddenly. And my hope is that Neptune going into Pisces, which is the sign it rules, will help soften things, because there's a potential there for a real group spiritual consciousness connecting. And maybe that's what we're moving into at this point. I will say that the other thing, too, to mention, and this has been going on 2012, 2013, and 2014, and even into March this year, Uranus and Pluto were squaring each other in the sky. And just so you understand what that means, if you do the circle of the sky and you set up a 90-degree angle out of the 360 degrees of the zodiac, Pluto and Uranus are 90 degrees from each other, so they form like a right angle or a square. These two planets are kind of now generating a lot of energy. So you're having Uranus's sudden disruption in Aries scraping up against the evolution and transformation of Pluto in Capricorn in a practical way. So a lot of the stuff that's been hitting the fan over the last since 2012 has been Uranus square Pluto. Every time something happens, astrologers look at each other and go, oh yeah, Uranus square Pluto, there it goes again. You know, now it finally did its last direct hit in March, mid-March of this year, but it's still going to be kind of, the energy's been there for all these years, and it hasn't quite finished up whatever the changes are happening. I will say, in my limited perspective, the last couple of months have been kind of interesting. You know, even in the case, one case in particular I was thinking of is the whole Baltimore thing, the so-called riots that happened in Baltimore. And there was a very different response to them this time. The next day I saw all over Facebook people were posting pictures of how 90% of the riots were peaceful, and how the so-called riots didn't start until the police got involved, and people are posting pictures showing what's going on. So we're not having that knee-jerk reaction of like, you know, we got to keep the poor people down and everything sucks.
Yeah.
We're having people's group consciousness becoming more aware. I had a friend of mine call me. I wouldn't call her conservative, but I wouldn't call her liberal either. And she was stunned by what her friends were posting. She used to live in Baltimore. That she considered very racist. And she said, but these are my friends. They're not racist. I said, well, wake up, you know. And even she was saying to me, don't they realize that, you know, all we've done is create a new form of slavery with the way the economics are set up.
Oh,
they
yeah.
really haven't improved it. And she started talking about bank mortgages and the way they've destroyed neighborhoods. And I'm like, you know, I'm on the phone with her. I'm like, do you have the right number? Because I don't know who you are. So I think there has, in particular now, actually, one additional trigger. I don't mean to drown everybody in astrological stuff, but one
loving
additional
it, trigger, loving it.
Saturn has been in Scorpio for the last 2 years or so, a little 2.5 years roughly per sign. And Scorpio can be a bit brooding and a bit kind of deeply emotional. Well, Saturn has moved into Sagittarius. It will back out of it for a couple of months this summer, but then it'll be in Sag solidly for like the next 2.5 years. So it's going from a water sign to a fire sign. And Saturn is about how we structure things. And now the structure's on fire, and I don't mean that in the sense of destruction, but the structure's changing. Sagittarius is asking us to open up the structure of how we create the world, open up the ideas. I mean, Hillary joining the race, to me, whether I like her or not, is just like she's just another politician these days. But to have Bernie Sanders go out there and start poking his finger in everybody. I think these elections in the next year or two are going to be let's just say, very interesting. Mm-hmm. And as the Chinese, I don't know if you know this, the Chinese have a curse. May you live in interesting times.
Uh-huh.
And I think we're coming up on that, because I think there's some real shifts that are want to happen. We're having, of course, many knee-jerk responses, but we're having other people responding, saying, no, wait a minute, we've had it. Wait a minute, we're tired of more breaks for the rich. Wait a minute, things aren't right here. I think some of the signs of the shift of the Uranus square Pluto and the Neptune thing is Obamacare came through. Healthcare is a very Neptunian thing. He had to fight like crazy to get through it, as crippled as it was. Mm-hmm. And I can see that fighting is Pluto squaring Uranus. So it's not really done yet. And I mean healthcare in general. I'm not specifically referring to Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying I think there are shifts coming. And Obamacare is one of the first signs of, like, you know, we've had employer-sponsored healthcare since World War II. And now suddenly somebody's finally, and the Clintons brought it up 25 years ago.
She did.
And now we're finally getting to a part where it's actually being considered, and to a certain degree, for good or for bad, whether it's a great thing or not, I think it's still crippled myself. But still, it's there. It's in place. The Republicans have tried to annul it. Like, I think they've taken 247 votes or something to annul it, and it still hasn't passed to annul it.
Yeah.
So I think it's here to stay. Hey, and I think that's one of the signs that there is a shift going on, a serious shift of some kind.
Well, you're also saying, Anthony, that people are beginning to think more critically, because you spoke about your friend that you were like, is this the right phone number?
Yeah.
People are waking up and looking mostly because of the indie media and social networks that are, you know, just pounding down on the facts, or what can be seen as the facts. I mean, I don't want to get into that one, but mass media or the major media ignores much, while the Twitter network and all the indie little groups from Democracy Now! To Think TV and Truth Television and all those shows are beginning to put the information out, and much quicker, and people who have, folks who think, are looking at these things and saying, hey, wait a minute, man, I'm not going to listen to, Joe Scarborough or Anderson Cooper tell me one thing when I'm watching, thousands upon thousands of others who are standing in the midst of it say something different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's just not working. I think we're seeing, that's a big shift too. It's like all these little shows we do. It makes a big difference, in the long run.
Yeah, there's a meme I saw on Facebook the other day from a group called Collective Evolution, and it said, the 67 richest people in the world now have as much wealth as the bottom 3.5 billion. Yeah. But let's all talk about deflated footballs instead.
Yeah, right.
I think people are becoming more aware of this. It's like, wait a minute, the news. Look, I grew up in, I'm a child of the 60s. Literally, I was in my tens and teens in the 60s, and we actually saw photographs from Vietnam.
Yes,
we actually saw raw footage.
We did.
Now we have embedded, i.e., in the pocket, reporters that are permitted to go in there. And I understand. In certain wars, you do have to censor some material, but censoring the actual violence is not the same as censoring, secret information that you don't want the enemy to get a hold of.
Right.
And
censoring the whole story and giving you little sound bites. You're like,
right.
What? Yeah.
It birthed Julian Assange and WikiLeaks.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All clearly needs to happen, right? I mean, we're right on schedule here, if you think of it on the...
Yeah, I would say that. And I don't think... Look, I think some people are going to fight back. And I think, because they're scared, as I said, I think fear... Look, it always comes down to love versus fear, the opposite of love isn't really hate, it's fear.
Yeah.
Because if you feel comfortable with something and loving, you're not going to worry about it.
Right.
I think that's ultimately what the Christ consciousness is saying. If you love is the answer to everything, maybe not quite as the way the Beatles put it, love is all you need, but there is something to that, you know, because if you have the faith of love, you'll have the feeling that you'll find a way through it. The universe is a safe place. I can find what I need. You know, animals don't get up every day and worry, like, am I going to find enough to eat today? You know, they just go out and get it, you know. That's something actually Seth has said, that you know, animals have never questioned the meaning of their lives. They know exactly why they're here, they know exactly what they're supposed to do, and they don't have, I suppose some of them might have been, that have been raised with humans, it might be a different story, but out in the wild, they know exactly what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And there's never been that, like, you know, what is the meaning of life, and is this real or is this not real? It's like they know what their meaning is.
And get on with it.
Yeah.
Right? Go to the water hole. Who cares if there's a lion there? You know, it happens, doesn't happen, then we're going to drink at the hole again, right?
And if he chases us, we'll try to get away. And if we do, great. And, you know.
Right.
And really, that's pure Zen. I mean, the old thing of, like, the student goes to the master and it's like, I want to know the meaning of life. And he said, have you eaten? He said, well, go eat, you know. And then he comes back and he says, well, have you washed your bowl? He says, no, he said, go wash your bowl. And that's the meaning of life, you know. Eat when you're hungry, wash your bowl when it's dirty, and just do what you do and go forward, you know.
Chop wood, carry water.
Yeah, right. You know, when walking, just walk. When talking, just talk. And it's obviously tough because we all have trouble with it. But,
with the worry thing, I mean, I just rode back from Philadelphia, and we had this really zippy car. It was bright red. I mean, you do not need a magnifying glass to see me coming, right?
Right.
So I was like, well, I realized that I'm very visible here, you know, so how fast can I go? And I had this whole conversation with myself. I really felt like it was a guided meditation because I would hear my guide say, just go, just do it. And I was like, yeah, but, you know, they're looking and are they following me? And all the songs kept saying, you know, just drive, have a wonderful drive. And I thought, you know what, who cares? Even if I were to get a ticket, I'm so worried about the ticket. Am I enjoying just driving? And so I put the pedal to the metal, found a few driving buddies, and it was a beautiful experience. So
here you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's what goes on. And I think sometimes there. I don't believe in things like the Illuminati because I don't think any of us could be that organized and well run. But I do believe there is a consciousness that we have a society that's driven to purchase things. You know, it's a capitalist society. I'm not necessarily saying capitalism in itself is wrong, but pure capitalism becomes just a system to feed the system. And it just becomes buy, and get rid of the old stuff. And I sometimes feel like they introduce new products to just, like, here's something shiny. Pay no attention to what's going on around you. You need the latest car. You need the latest doodad. You need the latest whatever it is.
Exactly what Bush did after 9/11.
Right.
Yes, go out and shop, or the terrorists have won.
Right. Yeah.
Could you imagine if FDR said that after Pearl Harbor?
People be like, what?
Go back to shopping, you know?
The American people, that was an opportunity for the American people to recoalesce the values of the country. It was a huge opportunity. I mean, a few years before, Clinton dropped a bomb on an Iraqi, the pill making facility.
Right, right. The pharmaceutical spill. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and there were many, many deaths that they did not report. But what it did was, in its eventuality, it took out all the pharmaceutical drugs, and millions of people died and suffered from that. And that's the pebble in the pond that we are being told, I think we're being nudged to take a look at, you know. what we do matters. How we are thinking matters. Anthony just said it. You know, you bring to you with you have all kinds of influences to help you out. Now, how are you going to swing with it? You know.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the thing is, much of I love astrology. That damn free will is always involved. And
pesky little creature.
I know. And as a result, you know, we do have the option to make stupid choices. You know, but that's, some of us learn that way. Look, the thing is, making one stupid choice is okay. You know,
don't make it again.
Yes, it's when you've made the same 17 times in a row, you've run into the same brick wall at 90 miles an hour.
you spell moron. M-O-R-A-N, you get in front of a camera holding a gun, you know.
Yeah. It's, you know, and the thing of, with Bush, I said, as I looked at that period after 9/11, I said, imagine if Bush had turned and said, all of us have to get off oil, we have to get into solar, we have to put
absolutely
all the country into green energy, then the so-called oil barons would not have the power over us. But, of course, we have to remember our president was from an oil baron family,
right,
you know, at the time. So yeah, the opportunity, well, let's put it this way. The opportunity was delayed. Mm-hmm. I'm even seeing now, you know, we've had the wind power, this huge giant windmills, and people are complaining that, well, birds are being hurt by them and stuff. It's like, okay, that's a legitimate concern. And now somebody has invented a giant windmill that is basically a pole, and the blades of the windmill are vertical. So basically it's almost like a little turbine on a stick.
I saw it.
Aren't huge blades spinning around. There's just this whizzing in a circle of this pole. So the ability is there to think of these things.
Right.
There's engineering students who are playing with ideas from the waves that are constantly hitting the shores, producing
right.
energy for whole cities and just remarkable things that there is, I think, I'm with you with the Illuminati, but I do think there is a group of people who are connected to one another, maybe in a long, you know, way, but they all have an agenda of keep it where it is right now. And that's where the heart of fear lies on the planet right now. It's with those folks and the pebble they are in our pond.
Yeah, I think it's very true, and I think we are being sold the myth of scarcity.
Yeah.
I'm going to get yours. And the truth is, actually, they've done calculations. If we use the Earth in a little bit better way, we could easily sustain 8 billion people on the planet. I don't know if I'd necessarily want that many neighbors, but the ability is there. But, you know, we're sold this, it's going to run out. You better get yours now and pack it away, you know.
Yeah.
And that promotes the fear agenda. It's not going to be enough for you.
Poverty, you know, consciousness.
You know, life in the food chain. You might be eaten, so you better get eat first, you know.
Right.
And it's just
not the truth. I mean, is
no,
one
no.
It, one is all is one. If you get in sync with the universe, it all works out.
Yeah. I got into an argument online with somebody who was complaining that, you know, he should have the right to accumulate wealth if he wants to. And somebody else said, I'm all for accumulating all the wealth you want, once everybody has been taken care of. And what she was saying was that if, you know, basic health care, food, and shelter
and
could
water.
Eat, what?
And water.
And water, yeah. Basic food care, shelter, water, food could be taken care of. And then, like, if you want to keep working really hard and have 5 homes and 6 continents or whatever, you go right ahead and do it. But that shouldn't be at the expense of your neighbor's health.
Yes.
You know, or your neighbor's homelessness or whatever it might be.
Sounds like Denmark to me. I'm not kidding.
No, it's true. There are countries that are much closer to that than we are. And
there's always going to be some form of hierarchy because that's what gives us cohesion, society, you know. But it's still, it's like you said, Anthony, there are lots of little ancillary groups, and they're getting stronger and stronger than even political groups in certain communities. People
yes.
are, because it's not just confined to the United States. It's like you said, you have a client in Pakistan who you probably have a friendship with, and the two of you exchange, you know,
mm-hmm.
portions of your lives and have a friendship. So there's a connection there that I think rises above all of this fear. And that's what's happening, that it's making a huge difference too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the ability to connect to people outside of that pyramid network, outside. I mean, the first thing they wanted to do in the Arab Spring was shut off the internet.
Oh,
you know,
right, silence.
And even last year we had the tremendous fight over net neutrality, which, you know, was basically, in a nutshell, the wealthier companies wanted to, by paying more money, steer searches to them instead, which means they were basically turning traffic away from small businesses and everything else. Luckily, it did not pass, you know, because there was an outcry about it.
Well,
but
so many of their partners realized, I mean, the cat's out of the bag as far as retail business goes on the online. If they did that, those huge companies would eventually be non-supported financially too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things I think works better is when some of these small companies use the larger companies as shipping and distribution. You know, you have, you know, I get a very exotic cat litter because it's the best I need. Sometimes the stores carry it, sometimes they don't. But I buy it through a big pet conglomerate online when I need it, and it's shipped from the smaller company, but the order goes to them, so that makes it easier. So everybody makes something out of it as opposed to crushing the small people. And
Well, and there's also this too, and this is very Aquarian, I think. There are actually green corporations out there that are truly green. And by green, I mean, first and foremost, you've got a spiritual resonance, whereas there's an integrity that you will not do business in a way that harms the planet, that harms a culture, that, you know, and it's very difficult to do business that way right now, but there are companies that are achieving that.
Yes, and I remember, gosh, as early as the mid-80s, when I started subscribing to Mother Jones magazine, there would be ads in the back for, the term didn't exist at the time, but essentially they were politically correct investment portfolios, where these bankers would put together investment portfolios that were green, that were not, you know, employing slave labor in Laos or whatever. Oh. And so the consciousness has been there. And I think the internet and things like that have made it a lot easier for, again, the tribes to connect.
Yeah.
Is the best way I put it, you know.
What do you see coming up?
I was just going to ask that.
Well, we are still, I think, in a certain amount of chaos right now, in the sense that things are still shaking out. Uranus in about, you know, that's how I pronounce it, Uranus instead of Uranus,
yeah.
Something all astrologers have learned. Uranus is going to be out of Aries in probably about another 4 or 5 years tops. And so that's going to take some of the pressure. It's going to go into Taurus, so moo, you know, things are just going to, that radical sudden change that's been going on for the last, you know, 5 years, in the next 3 or 4 years at least, will slow down a little bit. Neptune's going to stay in Pisces, so we're still going to have that spiritual connection. And a little later on, Pluto will be moving into Aquarius, which is the age it's in. Let me see if I can find an exact year here, because I think that'll be an interesting time. And I'm taking a really big picture here. In 2023, Pluto goes into Aquarius, and I think that'll be a 15-year period where we're really going to be – Pluto is going to be in connection with the Aquarian age. So I think some of the shakedown and shakeup that's been going on, Neptune will still be in Pisces at that time. Uranus will still be in Taurus. So I think there's a possibility of – I could see some chaos over the next couple of years. There's going to be some shakeups because it's really entrenched. And there's going to have to be some things happening that will push that entrenchment, whatever that might be. And I'm not going to make a prediction, because I do believe that even as a society, as a group consciousness, we also have free will.
Right.
Which doesn't have to be a disaster. It doesn't have to be a 9/11 or a Hurricane Katrina or a Superstorm Sandy to kick us out of our sleep, you know. Mm-hmm. But something needs to push. Something needs to happen. And I think there'll be a shift in that sense towards a better kind of an understanding of what's going on around us. I think there'll be some shakeup, but I think in the long run, it'll finally settle in and work better. I think Aquarian energy is, so Aquarius energy is head energy, but it's in the sense of mentality, but it is also about the group consciousness. And, you know, mostly the symbol of Aquarius is always the water bearer, and people don't realize it's not the water that matters. What an Aquarian, the symbolism of an aquarium, and back in the old days when we didn't have running water, you needed a water bearer. They went down to the river, they got buckets of water, and they brought it back to the town and gave it to the communal water pit, whatever it might be. So the water bearer was the one that served the community. So there's a nature of Aquarius, the idea of serving the community. That's why you see pharmacists, scientists are often part of that, because they're thinking Aquarius energy to serve the community in some way. That's the ideal goal.
Yeah.
And I also think, by the way, over the next, you know, I mentioned earlier that the babies of the 60s have the energy of the 60s inside them. Since we're talking about Uranus and Pluto, which are squaring each other right now, well, 50 years ago, they were actually conjunct. I mean, they were right on top of each other in Virgo. And just that's from like 62 to about 68. And just to explain what that means, Uranus is, again, disruption and sudden change and freedom and new ideas. And Pluto is about evolution and major transformation. And it was in the sign of Virgo. And Virgo loves rules and tradition. So basically, in the 60s, we blew up all the rules and traditions. Not to throw them all out, but Uranus is saying, there's got to be another way to do this. And Pluto's saying, I'll help you, brother. Don't worry about it. And so you had a lot of the rules thrown out. Men stopped wearing, let's just begin at the beginning of the 60s. Look at Mad Men. They were wearing hats and smoking all the time. By the end of the 60s, you know, men could grow their hair long. People didn't have to dress a certain way. I mean, it did adjust over the years, but there was a big explosion of let's try it a new way. Why do I have to have a marriage license? Why do I have to, et cetera, et cetera? Why do I have to go to war just because my dad went to war? And what I'm interested in, you know, I mentioned squares earlier. There's another aspect in astrology called a trine, which is a more harmonious aspect. And trines occur between the same elements in astrology. So since 2008, Pluto went into an Earth sign. It went into Capricorn. It will be in Capricorn until about 2022, 23. So that means at some point, all of the 60s babies are going to have Pluto by transit trining the Uranus-Pluto in their chart. So I'm wondering if that generation is getting triggered to bring about positive transformation in the world in a practical way, an Earth sign. It's happening slowly because, you know, the people born in the early 60s might have Uranus and Pluto at like 10 degrees Virgo, and the people born later in the 60s, it might be 25 degrees Virgo. So it's going to be a wide range, and Pluto's going to move slowly through the signs. But I'm wondering if it's just sending these like, hey, guys, let's wake up and let's get something done here. And I'm wondering if some of the things that are being created now are in some ways the 60s remixed. The 60s with some of the stupidity left behind. You know, part of that, too, I want to mention, the 60s generation, the hippies that were the hippies, we were all born with Pluto in Leo. So that generation, as I mentioned, the outer planets of generational influences, that generation dealt with a new definition of what me meant, Leo. And you know, even things like do your own thing as long as you don't hurt anybody, and the whole idea of like rejecting certain amounts of responsibility because I don't want to do it. It's very
Pluto and Dean.
Yeah, all that stuff. These are the people that had Pluto and Leo and who were redefining, and of course later on the hippies became the me generation, the me decade in the 70s. It shifted into that idea. So there's a whole shift in the consciousness of who an individual was in relation to society. So now we have the possibility of the children, the actual children from the 60s, taking it a little step further. So I'm fairly optimistic. Of course, it can all get flushed down the tubes, but I think the more we concentrate on positive, the better we'll all be. It's like you say, you can sit there worrying, about driving 80 miles an hour and getting a ticket, or you can realize that this is what we should be doing and do it, you know.
Right, roll the windows down, let the hair go.
Right, you know. Like old Springsteen, roll down the window and let the wind blow back your hair, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm very positive about it, and Seth has suggested that you know, it's amazing how much of that apocalyptic literature is out there now. Suddenly everything is a dystopian future, Hunger Games, the world's collapsed, children are hunting each other for God's sakes.
And zombies.
Seth made a wonderful comment. He said, if the world was as horrible as you sometimes think it is, we wouldn't have made it 500 years. Okay. The basic underlying energy to the universe is positive, you know, and he even says you have to work very hard to make it not work, you know.
That's a very good idea to keep putting out there on top of everything.
Yeah.
The universe leans in your direction is a direct quote from Seth, and I've always loved that. The universe leans in your – and I think, again, of those animals that get up in the morning and go out and find some food. They don't have – for a second, they don't think, I'm not going to find any food, right. You know.
And Abraham's downstream, it's the same thing. Let mm-hmm. the boat turn around and just let the stream carry you instead of paddling so hard like a maniac.
Yeah, and Abraham was actually – the woman who channels Abraham was inspired by the Seth material.
Yes, she was.
So,
Dr. Hicks, yeah.
It's continuation. I love it.
The other thing I also love about Seth, just to bring up one of my favorite quotes from him, he basically says we create our own reality on every level. And he says the more serious you try to be about stuff, the less likely it's going to work. Like if you're going to go and help somebody because you're a good person and they need to be helped and yada, 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 it's not going to work that well. He says everything should be done in a spirit of play. And he actually says, and this is one of the most radical things I think he's ever said, if it isn't fun, stop doing it.
For real.
Yeah, which goes against every, all of the stuff what it's up with. But I think, and it doesn't, obviously doesn't mean I don't want to pay the rent, screw everybody. But I do think it means that you should be having fun in what you're doing. And if you're not enjoying yourself and you're not having fun, something's wrong.
Yeah, it's the balance road right there. You should still be able to get it done and still let it be fun. And that's the game, right? Learn that.
I had a workman come here to my apartment this week because one of the lamps, the switch wasn't working and the ceiling lamp. And we were talking about the landlord who was, he owns a lot of tenements and he's a bit of a young, he thinks he's Donald Trump, but he's not. And he's fairly wealthy and a miserably unhappy person. And
happens
that, right? And what I love is the workman guy. He's like, you know, he goes, you and me, he said, we understand what it's like to live with less. We don't lose it if, like, we don't have a new car or, you know, we don't have a new building. He says, because you and I know how to roll with it. We know what matters in life. We have family, we have kids, we have friends, we have some nice weather. Life is okay, you know?
Yeah.
And those priorities, somehow, I feel, over the last 40 years have gotten completely skewed due to people interested in making a lot of money and trying to convince all of us that making a lot of money is the only thing that matters, you know? And look, having stuff is important. I mean, you have to have some things, but there's got to be a balance somewhere, you know.
There's Anthony, we have like 6 minutes left, so I'd really love it if you would tell folks, especially in the New York City area, how they can get a hold of you, what you're up to, what your schedule is.
Well, I'm in the phone book to start with, but...
get out those yellow pages.
well, I have a very irregular blog. It used to be more regular, but I'm not as full of myself as I used to be. That's at CosmicTuesdays.com, and I discuss astrology, but it's not one of those blogs you go to hear, you know, next week Venus will be this, and you should watch your shoes or something. It's a little more metaphysical. I talk about what astrology means, what it suggests about life, and other metaphysical stuff that I come across. So I just sort of write it as it inspires me. Actually, once a month at the Quest bookstore in New York City, which is on West 50, 53rd Street, between 2nd and 3rd Avenues, we have the monthly New York City Astrology Meetup, which you can find either by putting NYC Astrology Meetup into your browser or go join meetup.com for free and seek it out. It's an all-level astrology meetup. We usually have a person that speaks. We have an opening bit on people that don't know anything about astrology but want to learn a little bit. We have like an opening 15-minute chat for them, and then we have the speaker come on who still tries to gear it to be understandable on as many levels as possible. And that's once a month, although in June, on June 4th and June 18th, we're doing two of them. And it's a $5 suggested donation. We'd love to get the money because we have to pay rent, but if you don't have any money, come on down. It's one of the things we're doing. And of course, once a week, except for Memorial Day weekend, I co-host a radio show on the internet with Sherita Starr called What's Your Sign? I Have Your Number. And Sherita is a numerologist and an astrologer, and I am an astrologer. And we too have guests on and discuss astrology and numerology. And, oh, the meaning of life, which is basically go out and, you know, get something to eat when you're hungry. and that's from 7 to 9 p.m. on Mondays. It's called the HAYZ Radio Network. It's HAYZradio.com. And you can find us there and listen to the chat room and stuff like that. Actually, Gwen, you were a guest on our show 2 months ago, I think, roughly.
Yeah, and that was fun.
It is. We have a lot of fun on the show. It's 2 hours long, and it's very chatty and relaxed. We've had psychics on, psychic mediums. We've had aromatherapists on. We've had tarot card readers, Reiki experts. We had an African – the word shaman doesn't really apply to African religion, but he was, in essence, an African shaman. I can't remember the word he used. It was a very specific – terminology. I can't remember. We've had a Persian astrologer on, which I didn't even know existed until he came on. Wow. And we actually, this week coming up, this Monday, in 2 days, we're having Dr. Karen Wyatt, who is a doctor who has written a metaphysical book about death and what happens.
Oh,
so
wow.
There we have somebody combining the two. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a medical doctor who has appreciated a lot of the metaphysics.
Nice.
Yeah, and which to me, that's one of the most exciting guests because
it's about time.
Yes.
Right?
we actually discovered I was at a Reiki, the only Reiki conference in New York so far was a couple of years ago, and one of the people we had on very quickly, he's a breast cancer surgeon up at Columbia Presbyterian, and if he thinks his patient is open to the idea, he will bring up Reiki to them. And he has operated with a Reiki master in the operating room with him.
Nice.
So
that's what you call energy medicine. And
yes.
New York, California, and Florida are the states that are doing the most gravitation in that direction.
And I think it's good. I'm not anti-science. I am anti the idea that science has all the answers. It certainly has a lot of them, but there's a lot of other questions that can't be answered by science. And I think the blending of the two is really where our future can lie, you know.
Whole picture.
Yeah, the whole picture, not like, oh, my God, was that a ghost? You must be imagining. No, I actually saw a ghost, yes. So we have to wrap up. Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's been a lot of fun.
Oh, I hope you'll come back and talk with us again. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you, Ian.
Oh, I can talk. My wife tries to stop me sometimes. I talk so much.
That's fantastic. We'll have to get together. I mean, you know, you're just up the road from me, and I'll definitely head over to 52nd Street. That's great.
Sure.
We'll see you in person soon.
Yes, next month on June 4th, we're having an astrology clinic. An astrology clinic where you can bring all your questions about astrology and get them answered if we can answer them.
Oh,
so that's
cool.
June 4th at 7 p.m.
Awesome.
So, thank you again.
Thank you.
You are most welcome, and thank you for being with us. Nick, you want to give them your real
quick? Yeah, Monday, 7 p.m., we're doing spirit therapy, as always, talking about something happening right now.
That sounds good.
And don't forget to tune in right here on Here Be Monsters tomorrow, 6 p.m. for the Sunday show roundtable with the resident radical myself and a progressive and a conservative when we talk about getting it done. So tune in.
The whole boat.
Yeah, you know.
You too. Thank you.